So it was this morning at the expo. It was interesting. I read something that I don't know if you guys know, but 2.5 million people since 1964 have died from exposure to secondhand smoke. This was in a report from the Surgeon General and something, some literature that I was reading at the expo this morning. I just thought it was really interesting. It was kind of just, to me, it kind of hit home, this little motivator. You know, it kind of reminded me why I got in public health, because 2.5 million people, you know, and it made me think that these barriers that we're going to talk about today, you know, that are related to policy implementation of smoke-free outdoor public places, you know, these are about real people and real stories. So I have nothing to disclose. And today when you leave here, I want you to be able to identify barriers to implementing smoke-free outdoor public places, and then also understand how the implementation of a unified performance management system can really assist you in identifying these barriers and analyzing these barriers related to this strategy. First, I want to talk a little bit about We Choose Health. This is the statewide initiative from the Illinois Department of Public Health. It's funded by the CDC Community Transformation Grant. Illinois is a rest of state grantee. You can see the map to the right there. That's just the reach of We Choose Health. So over half the state is reached through this initiative. And the IDPH is encouraged to support the implementation of proactive health programs in three areas: the Healthy Eating and Active Living, the Smoke-Free Initiatives, and the Healthy and Safe and Built Environment Initiative. So the Illinois Department of Public Health contracted with us at the University of Illinois at Chicago for the performance management and the evaluation for We Choose Health. So the subawardees implemented up to 8 evidence-based strategies. Just to note that the subawardees, no subawardee implemented all 8 strategies. There were several that implemented 7 of the strategies, but the majority of the subawardees implemented from 4 to 5 of these strategies. And it's kind of hard to see, but the strategies were coordinated school health, worksite wellness, baby-friendly hospitals, complete streets, safe routes to school, joint use agreements, and then the smoke-free living initiatives, which were smoke-free multi-unit housing and then smoke-free public places. So 15 local health departments, which covered 53 counties, and 81% of these counties were rural, worked to build upon the success of the Smoke-Free Illinois Act. So in 2008, the Smoke-Free Illinois Act was passed in Illinois, and this protects Illinois residents from secondhand smoke in virtually all indoor public places. So we're looking at things as workplaces, offices, theaters, museums, libraries, educational institutions, schools, shopping centers, restaurants, bars, etc. So this work really looked to expand upon that and bring this initiative to look at the outdoor public places to build upon that. The local health departments worked with their communities to educate, to provide some sample languages and sample policies, and then also to secure funding for signage. The locations here, they developed these smoke-free policies for outdoor locations, things such as parks, sports complexes, outdoor recreation spaces, campuses, maybe a college campus or a hospital campus, fairgrounds, and forest preserves. So in order to measure this process and the outcomes for our We Choose Health activities, we developed a performance management system. This was also a program mandate by the CDC. Our goal in this development was to create a standardized system that allowed for these nuances. So we really wanted to create these comparable data points across the state, whether it was across the subawardees or across different strategies, and to create this holistic picture of the diffuse implementation that was really happening all around the state. And one of the most important things that we're talking about today is obviously we were able to pull, you know, and identify these barriers from this performance management system, and then also identify the technical assistance needs as well, which we'll talk about in a couple slides. This really was an iterative development process. You know, we had many rounds and cycles of operations and many rounds of analysis that we went through, in which we really closely worked with our subawardees until we actually reached, you know, our desired result for this system. These were quarterly reports. This was built with InDesign, and then these reports were submitted electronically from the grantees to us each quarter. So they filled out Adobe PDF forms. We originally wanted to do an online database, but due to some technology barriers with some of the rural health departments, we realized the best way was to just have them email us the reports quarterly. So we We exported the data from Adobe Pro, and then we imported into whether it was SPSS, Atlas TI, or Excel, depending on if it was quantitative or qualitative. It was then flagged for issues and then synthesized and disseminated back to key stakeholders. We received several thousands of pages of data per quarter, so it was a lot of data to go through per quarter. And then we kind of would synthesize this back down, and we produced this at-a-glance report, which really gave a nice snapshot from each quarter. And really, you know, instead of giving people 2,000 pages worth of data, we really just kind of cut that down to this at-a-glance report, which you can see in this infographic. We were then able to give to key stakeholders. And so the subawardees reported their quarterly reports here, and this is where we collected these barriers. And this performance management system we really used, this was our hub for the evaluation. And so our evaluation team then was able to produce this at-a-glance report that I talked about, and we were able to fulfill the reporting requirements of the CDC here. We were also able to feed the information needed to our program manager, to the Illinois Department of Public Health. We were also able to give the information needed to the technical assistance providers and show those TA needs that were happening, and also able to give these at-a-glance reports and what has been happening on the grant and keep them aware and up to speed on everything. And then also provide information to the leadership team was key as well. But the most important piece was feeding this information back to the subawardees on a quarterly basis so that they could use these at-a-glance reports for their work. And maybe it wasn't necessarily something they did, but all the subawardees received all of the subawardees' at-a-glance reports. So they were able to see that maybe a county next to us is having success in smoke-free outdoor public places. And so they're able to then maybe connect with the county next to them. And they also, we shared all the barriers that they were having, so they were able to see, maybe connect with someone that was struggling in the same way as them as well. So I think that really helped them move forward, because then they were able to almost support each other in a way as well. Through this data collection and identification of barriers, you know, our technical assistance providers we had for each strategy were really able to assess the needs and then also just deliver the services when needed. So based on these identified needs, the Illinois Tobacco-Free Communities, this was our technical assistance provider for We Choose Health for the smoke-free initiatives. And they were able to bring in some smoke-free experts, the American Lung Association, Illinois chapter, and then also the Respiratory Health Association. And they conducted webinars, networking groups, and even held some site visits. And they also were able to have an in-person training leveraging the Illinois tobacco-free dollars. The subawardees attended annual action institutes, which really helped them with some education and provided them with resources and tools needed. And really due to the work of We Choose Health and these subawardees, this Illinois tobacco-free communities reconfigured their grant program that more realigned with what the subawardees of We Choose Health were doing. And that really, this one-day training here, this in-person training, kind of served as that jumping-off point for this reconfiguration for the policy systems, environmental changes, focused on this smoke-free policy work. And then just as needed, provided support to local champions. So the question that we were looking to answer was, what barriers or challenges to implementing smoke-free outdoor public place policies were encountered during this We Choose Health initiative? Our analysis of the barriers took all of the qualitative data that we'd received over the previous 2 years, and we analyzed this using open coding with Atlas TI, and then our barriers were grouped into themes, and then we also, multiple colleagues, were compared the coding and these themes to ensure inter-rater reliability. So we grouped all barriers into three themes: procedural, political, and cultural. And then I'm going to illustrate the findings over the next few slides with some quotes from the subawardees. Skipped a slide here. Okay, sorry about that. So first, our largest theme was procedural. We defined this theme as the steps needed to advance the strategy. And our top five reported procedural barriers were first enforcement, then communication, personnel, meetings, and time. And digging a little deeper into the procedural barrier, so 67% of our subawardees reported enforcement barriers. And we define this as the act of making individuals comply with the policy. One of our subawardees reported that enforcement issues of a smoke-free ordinance have been cited as one of the most common reasons for not wanting to become a smoke-free facility. So they really struggled. There were really some procedural barriers there with this enforcement. Being able to feel that they could enforce the policy was really a top barrier of these procedural barriers. The next theme is political barriers. We define this as the barriers imposed by elected and local officials that prevent the actions of others through voting or refusal to pursue a law, ordinance, or regulation. And our most frequent political barriers, the top was buy-in from public officials, then community approval, participation, time, and knowledge. And just a note on this time barrier was related to the time of the elected and local officials, whereas the time on the procedural was more the time of the health department staff and them not having the time due to other health department tasks or other strategies to be able to engage in smoke-free outdoor public places. So similar but very different on the end user there. So 93% of our subawardees reported buy-in barriers. So almost all. We define this as the lack of interest and support by board members, chairs, and officials. And one of the quotes that was reported by our grantees, some of those in public office are not willing to adopt an ordinance they feel will upset a large part of their constituency. And probably the most interesting theme that came out of our barriers was this cultural theme. This is probably also the hardest of the three to address. We define this as the common and accepted behavior relating to the geographic location or the community members and stakeholders who live there, and the belief that people have the right to smoke and that authorities should not intrude on that right. So 100% of the cultural barriers that we coded fell under either rural areas, smokers' rights, or social norms. So we're really interested in these rural barriers, especially, for one, because CTG had an emphasis on and a rural focus. And all of these cultural barriers were very strong. You know, if you remember that 81% of the 53 counties covered by this initiative were rural, so 43 out of the 53 counties engaged in this work were rural status. And our performance management system did a really nice job at capturing this context and this rich programmatic detail that really picked up on this rural theme for us. And we really were able to pull that out of the data. A great quote by one of our sub-awardees, smoking is very prevalent in the rural area, and community members are resistant to implementing smoke-free policies. So characteristics of a rural and small community really make, you know, this policy implementation challenging, with the high rates of tobacco use mixed with a permissive policy environment. And then statistics show that rural residents have higher smoking rates than urban dwellers. And this stat was from the data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health analysis ran by the American Lung Association in 2010. You know, further analysis in the future, we could run further analysis to see if maybe the rural barriers were more intense than maybe some of the suburban and urban barriers as well. But these grantees and subawardees really did face many barriers of the procedural and political, but then also the rural barriers. Some of the successes from Rechoose Health, just some of the rural barrier, breaking the rural barrier, these successes that they have, just a few things that they were able to do to kind of break down these rural barriers. First, you know, the residents of these small towns in rural Illinois, they know everyone. They already had these relationships established. You know, a Publix park manager ended up living next door to one of the health department staff. And so that personal connection in rural Illinois really kind of served as an entry point for this education, and it also provided an opportunity for them to move this work forward. Leveraging tobacco control programs, the Illinois Tobacco Free Programs grant offers opportunities for cessation programming, advertising, and more to complement the policy systems and environmental changes through this work. And it seemed that the sub-awardees that offered support to partners for this Illinois tobacco-free program, when they approached them with this education and offered them the cessation program, it gave them more of a comprehensive package to the partners. And then finally, these alternative motivators. You know, while the argument for improving the general health of the public, you know, is a selling point to most, you know, it really doesn't always work in every case. So many of the sub-awardees realized this, that educating decision makers, they had to kind of come up with some creative ways and some alternative motivators, and such as the environment or protection and safety of children. So by collecting some litter from tobacco products, they were able to communicate in a little different way how the litter is harmful and toxic or if consumed by children. And one of the sub-awardees, a quick litter story on them, that before they would go to the board meetings, they would take these clear plastic tubes, and they would go to, you know, a park nearby, and they would go a couple hours before they went to the meeting, and they would just fill as many tubes as they could with just cigarette butts that they would find around the park. And then they would bring that as a visual to the board, and I think that that really helped as a motivator, that, you know, when realized the amount of cigarette butts that were littering the parks, you know, it kind of changed their minds and helped move them forward, and they could see. And they also had other times, you know, where they had children collect these and bring them in and see that, you know, the kids didn't want their parks littered with cigarette butts. So it was kind of some different creative ways to move these forward. In conclusion, just real quick, you know, just some facts that 100% of these sub-awardees reported procedural and political barriers. I mean, over half of the barriers coded were procedural. And then 67% reported were cultural barriers. So it's just, again, more needs to be done. You need to provide those stakeholders and the people working on these initiatives with that evidence, the key messages, sample policies, and those best practices, you know, beforehand, so that they go in there with the tools needed before they do this work. And then we learned that each sub-awardee was unique. You know, this one-size-fits-all approach just does not work in public health. And the barriers related to this implementation need to be assessed and tailored to, you know, each unique location. And then more exploration can be done on the barriers and geographic location. Quickly, I have to give credit to the sub-awardees of Illinois. You know, despite all the barriers faced, they really did make huge strides in the last few years. And with adoption of these policies, over 1,408,000 Illinois residents now have access to 218 outdoor public spaces that have adopted these policies. So, acknowledgments to the CDC, IDPH, Mid-America Center for Public Health Practice, and IHRP, and then also a big thanks to the evaluation team, Bill Baldiga, who's our principal investigator, is in the audience today, as well as Sarah Kirch, who has been very helpful in moving this forward, and then Laura Campbell as well, who her expertise with all of the Atlas TI work has been very helpful for all of us. I think I've probably gone over my time, so I'll be around after for any questions as well. And my contact information is on the slide here. Thank you.